don't know what the fuck happened. I just like passed out yesterday.
So you ran out of time to watch Chronos.
I watched it this morning. Not this morning. After.
I'm just hoping that you see the irony in that.
Yeah.
What's up? This is Movies on Up. What if every moment in life came with a second chance? You know, if I had a second chance to choose co-hosts, I would not choose any different than the man seated right across from me, Mr. Dave Bacella.
Even if he did, I'd find a way.
That's Mr. Dave. Life finds a way. That's a different tagline. That's Mr. Dave. I'm Ryan. We are Movies on Up. What if every moment in life came with a second chance is our tagline contest for this week. If you think you know what movie that tagline belongs to, we would love to hear about it in one of the three following ways. You can email us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave your guess on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup. Or you can tweet your guess at Mr. Mike Mann, manning the Twitter, no pun intended, @moviesonup on the Twitter, if you are correct. And if we choose you, it'll be about time that we send out a prize package to your residence that will contain all sorts of fun Movies on Up, maybe even like some spooky stuff, because it is October, which is Halloween month.
I think we have a disc with like 9 Hellraiser sequels that we bought like 3 years ago for a prize pack.
I'm sure. Honestly, what I love doing, a little how the sausage is made, I love going to Walmart and digging through that giant bin. If you go to like the Salem Walmart or like the Austintown Walmart now and you see two dress shoes just kicking in the air, it's me like waist deep in this bin looking for just stupid shit that we can put in prize packages. And it's the newer Hellraiser movies. So it's not even like 1, 2, 3. It's like,
it's not the Doug Bradley one.
No, it's like 13, 14, 15 or however many they're up to now. And I think there's a disc that has like the Prophecies 4, 5, and 6.
That's what it is. Yeah. It's the Prophecy. It's like 3 Prophecy sequels and 3 Hellraiser sequels.
Yeah, so that can be yours if you can tell us what movie What If Every Moment in Life Came with a Second Chance comes from. It's not a horror movie, but the idea of moments in life and time, more specifically, is very paramount to our episode today, which is Guillermo del Toro's 1993 flick Chronos, written and directed by del Toro, starring Federico Lippi, Ron Perlman, and Claudio Brook. The movie was released in 1994, April 1st, on a whopping 2 screens. As you can probably guess, it didn't make all that much money in its opening weekend, just $17,000. It was, suffice to say, very, very far down on the list of box office that weekend, which was dominated by The Wild Thing, Ricky Vaughn, Major League 2, was number one with $7 million. If you went to see a movie the beginning of April in 1994, it was probably a sports movie. You had Major League 2.
Bull Durham was
number one. Number two was another sequel to a sports movie that featured Charlie Sheen's brother.
Oh, Mighty Ducks 2.
D2. The Mighty Ducks was number two. The Paper, Naked Gun 33 and a third. Schindler's List was, I think, your fifth one. And then Above the Rim. So
Tupac.
we had a baseball, a hockey, and a basketball movie. So
Tupac was awesome in that movie.
I've heard he was pretty good in that.
In fact, I saw the movie in theater that weekend.
Like, there you go. I was gonna say, to say, if you saw, I don't think it was the opening weekend for Above the Rim, but you know, if you saw a movie in early April, I said you probably saw a sports movie, and it turns out Dave did. You probably didn't see Chronos because it only made $17,000, and it was only on 2 screens. It went on to gross $621,000. Let's not short it, $621,392 domestically, which puts it number 7,564 on the all-time list. Dave, can you tell me what movie ranks one place directly above that?
Bucky Larson.
No, it's not Bucky Larson. I'm going to tell you it's a movie that stars Roger Moore and Gene Wilder. You're still not going to guess it, because I certainly wouldn't either. But those two guys, bona fide movie stars, made a movie called Sunday Lovers, which was sort of like an anthology piece, but it was a sexy kind of romantic comedy movie from like 1963 or something, which made just slightly more than $621,000 in the box office. The movie directly below that is an Indian movie, a Bollywood flick, $7,565.
Quantico?
Priyanka Chopra was the star of Mary Kom, which is
That's the chick, isn't it? That's the Quantico chick.
That is. Yeah, same girl.
When they were hyping up Quantico, they kept saying, Priyanka Chopra is in Quantico. And I'm like, they're hyping her up. Like, it's not Matthew Perry in Quantico. Like, but that's how they were building it up. So I looked her up and realized, like, oh, only Bollywood movies. She's like the biggest Indian movie star.
Pretty much, yeah. And she was in this movie about Mary Kom, who was a female boxer. There you go. Didn't make a lot of money at the box office, but good luck on
Quantico.
She
killed Hilary Swank at the end.
Yeah, she did, that bitch. Just to kind of give you an idea of some other movies that are around there, a movie that we were both kind of excited to see, we talked a little bit about it in our summer preview, comes in at 7,569 all time, just below Cronos. It's Sleeping With Other People. Did not make a lot of money at the box office, but you know, we'll
catch
it.
That was one of those released on demand the same day.
I'll see it on demand for sure. Mm. A movie that we both have seen that did slightly outperform Cronos, 7,529th place all time, is Sam Peckinpah's The Wild Bunch. So that's about where that movie ranks, this vampire movie. I kind of want to start. I know. I want to start here because when we started our 28 Days Later episode, not that it really made a giant bit of difference. It was just more of a procedural thing. We kind of wanted to get it out of the way. Is this a zombie movie? And we decided, between the two of us, no, it's not. It's infected, and I stand behind that decision. Cronos, is it a vampire movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is?
Yeah.
I'm okay with calling it a vampire movie.
And
here's why.
The checklist is there.
Right. You have light sensitivity.
Blood,
got it.
Live forever.
Yep, got it.
Stabbed through the heart.
Yep, exactly. The only things we don't know is how garlic may affect him, or can he go into a nightclub without being invited in by the bouncer? Things like that, we don't know. But everything else seems to check the vampire box. The large difference is you're turned into a vampire by a bug that lives inside of a
spider.
Yeah,
a mechanical spider.
Probably not a spider. Spiders are arachnids. This was an insect, but I digress. It was a little creature anyway. That would be the glaring reason why you may not call it a vampire movie. But since we both agree, let's just go ahead and use the nomenclature of vampire from here on out, because that'll make it easier on us anyway. But whether it is or is not a vampire movie, it's kind of secondary. What it is, it's about time. And seemingly, if you have a vampire movie, a lot of times there is a character that, for whatever reason, wants to become a vampire. And typically, more often than not, that reason is they want to live forever. That seems like it's like the one good thing about being a vampire, although I think
that,
like,
and the ladies.
Yeah. Don't sell short having a harem. That sounds pretty cool. And the ability to turn into fog. Those all sound like powers.
Yeah, because fog, women's locker rooms make steam, which looks like fog.
And you can just mingle into that, transform some of them into your harem. I think we'd make a pretty kick-ass vampire team right here. But we can only get there through some kind of a bug. But what I do enjoy about this movie is how it kind of examines time and what it means to different people. And you have the old guy, the rich guy character, who, like a character in Dracula, who's willing to give up quote-unquote mortality to remain young and beautiful for their entire life. He's kind of at the end of his life, and he's desperate to keep hanging on. And the way that he feels that he can do this is like the Spanish emperor that commissioned the watchmaker to make this device anyway, is this desire to just keep on keeping on. I think it's very human, and it makes sense to a lot of people, I think.
He's relatable in that way, that he wants to not let go because he is very rich. So I could see wanting to hang on there. It is a nice contrast, because I think the average person, immortality would be terrifying. I really do. And that's why vampire stuff is so fascinating to me, because immortality is terrifying to average sane person that thinks logically. Nobody wants that. So to have a villain that does, and kind of a villainous sidekick who is just waiting for that villain to go away so that he can collect his stuff, it was a nice little dynamic. And then you have the character that does have the power that just doesn't want it.
Came by it accidentally. And I do like the way they have the dynamic between Perlman, his uncle, and really how they have sort of different snapshots of an individual's life. You have Aurora, the young girl, who says bupkis the entire movie, but you kind of understand what she's going through the whole time. You know, she obviously loves her grandfather, and she sticks with him even to the end.
When she shouldn't have.
Right, when she shouldn't have, when you know it would terrify anyone else. She's still very tender to him. And you get all that without her having to say anything. You kind of understand. So you see her just being like sort of young and naive and just full of emotion and generally good emotions for what ends up being a pretty scary looking dude. You have Perlman's character, who's quote unquote young. I mean, he's young and virile for what we see Ron Perlman
he
now.
He's a young looking Ron Perlman, doesn't look a day over 40.
Yeah, right. With a beautiful moulet in full fashion there. And he's basically, he has the youth, which is what his uncle wants, but he's dumb and he's impatient. And the biggest worry in his life is, when is his uncle going to die so he can get all his money? And what nose do I need? That's the worst thing in my life right now, is the fact that I don't like my nose.
I don't know that I would call him dumb. I just think unmotivated. Like, his motivation.
Lazy.
Yeah. All he's doing is waiting for this to come to an end. And he's just kind of at the beck and call of his uncle, who he can't say no to because he could take everything away. He knows his uncle's not going to last much longer. And I thought Perlman did okay with it. It does look like an actor in, like, his first major role. Yeah, I like the dynamic between him and his uncle, especially near the end.
The scene where his uncle's laying there bleeding out,
yeah,
and he's sort of dancing. They do make Perlman a great foil in this movie, like a great heel. The old guy really doesn't do a lot that makes you root for his demise. I mean, everything, for the most part. I mean, yeah, he's behind the trashing of the antique shop, obviously, but sort of everything that happens bad in the movie
is Perlman.
Intentionally is Perlman. So yeah, he's one you really want to see get it. But it's just interesting to see, you know, how they have three different snapshots of humans throughout our lifespan. And by the time you get to the end, you have everything. You've got knowledge. You've got wealth. But you would trade most of it, if not all of it, to just get the youth that Perlman has and doesn't cherish it at all. I think that that's why the character, Senor Grease, is kind of interesting, because he is old. But it feels like he understands his place in his life, and he's very happy to have what he does have.
Very, very happy. And that's the point I wanted to make next, is he gets this vibrancy, but he doesn't just abandon his life to go use it elsewhere. No, he uses it to enjoy time with his granddaughter. He uses it to get his wife excited again, to like use it towards her. It makes him feel great, but he's using it to make the other people around him feel great. And he uses it in a very non-selfish way, because he has a granddaughter he loves. He has a wife that he still loves after all these years. And that's all he needs. That's all he wants. And he has it. So,
and really, he doesn't necessarily know what he's doing is going to make him immortal, essentially. He knows that, I felt really bad when this happened the first time, and now I keep using this thing, and I feel great. I feel young. And yeah, he just basically wants to take advantage of that and spend time with people that he loves, and instead of just, I just want to be on this world more and enjoy my money, which is kind of our other old guy. I also like how time itself is kind of a character in the movie. I mean, it's a theme throughout the movie is called Kronos, for God's sake. What I love is the New Year's party, because I think right there it's kind of where everything time-wise sort of comes to a head. The party is for New Year's, which is celebrating the passage of time, a particular unit of time. There's a guy at that party who's dressed as a pocket watch. And then you have the scene where Senor Grease is dancing with Senorita Grease, and he's singing her the song about loving a woman essentially after you're dead, which is kind of what he's quote-unquote living. He's already, at this point, begun the transformation. For all intent and purposes, he is quote-unquote dead, and he still loves his wife. He still loves his granddaughter, and he wants to carry that on. But to me, it's sort of like using the vampire movie to talk about appreciating your time here.
Because at the end, with the uncle, I want a way out. he has this immortality that this guy wants so bad. And when he tells him he has a way out of this immortality, that's what he wants. For this whole time, he doesn't want to give over the device until he tells him, you can have a way out. And that's what makes him want to give it up, because the thought of immortality is terrifying.
There are some vampire movies that do that really, really well. And it's usually the ones that kind of focus on the character, the vampire, as sympathetic. Because you think that, oh man, it would be awesome to be like 28 forever, look like you're 28, feel like you're 28. But then when you think about what that entails,
you
watching
have to watch everybody you love die.
Right. Especially with Senor Gris having seen his son already die, he's very much unwilling to watch his granddaughter grow old and to live without her or to live without Mercedes.
His wife,
yeah. There's a lot that I forget about this movie. I've seen it probably four or five times. I like it a lot. It's my favorite Del Toro movie. It's probably the slowest of them all. Maybe not. But I love that grandfather-granddaughter relationship there. I think it's so sweet. And she's like his sidekick throughout the whole thing, throwing all her toys out of the toy box so that he can have a coffin, essentially, to sleep in. I love that dynamic there. I do think the inner family dynamics are, they're very contrasting, but they're very powerful in the movie.
The relationship with Aurora is phenomenal, but this is a weird term to use. It's almost underplayed, but it's such a strong love story between him and his wife. The letter he writes her is gut-wrenching. That is such a sweet moment when he's right. I hope when I come back, you will accept me in whatever form I am. And like, it's so sweet. Here he is. He has this gift. He has an out. He's dead. Everybody knows he's dead. He can go and enjoy this. All he wants to do is come home to his wife. That's all he wants. And the love story is so sweet. And you see it even earlier when she kind of brushes him off in the moment. And like, yeah, they've been together forever. They're going to have those moments. But he still has that look in his eye that he's happy. He doesn't want anything else.
From the start of the movie, he's the only one that has everything he wants.
Yes.
Perlman wants money. The old guy wants youth. Basically, they want what each other has. And he's the only one that's happy, and he's the one that loses it all first. And that's why for the rest of the movie, he always says, you have more to lose than I do.
And then if I'm losing it all, what am I losing it for?
Right, exactly. And you see that after he does say that one final time to Perlman, and they fall off the roof, and he's real tore up, gets the mechanism used on him for the last time, and he's got that to the point where I may not be able to help myself. And in that moment, he has enough of the Senor Gris. He is Jesus Gris inside of him that he's able to not only destroy the Kronos machine itself, but himself. This great, quote-unquote, great gift that a lot of people would pay a lot of money for, it's not worth his granddaughter.
That's such a powerful moment, because it's early Del Toro, and if you follow Del Toro's career, Del Toro loves little girls.
Sure does.
And Del Toro doesn't mind killing little girls. If you follow Del Toro's career and then go back to watch this, you don't know what's happening in that moment. You can 100% see Senor Gris hurting Aurora, but it's a sweet moment. The ending is very, very sweet, just how it's shot with Aurora there, and then Mercedes comes in, and it's like he's dying, but he has everything he wants right there with him. It's a really, really sweet movie. Maybe doing this in October is weird, because I don't think at any point this feels like a horror movie.
It doesn't.
Because I don't think it is.
No.
It's a vampire movie, but it's sure. A love story. It's a movie about time. It's not a horror movie. And it was never made out to be. But it's fantastic. And I say that almost in air quotes, because I don't love Kronos as much as you do. I think there's a lot about it that looks like a first time, a big time writer director debut
film for sure.
Yeah, but Mexico submitted it for the foreign language film Oscar. It didn't get the nomination, but that was what Mexico decided to submit. It is a beautifully crafted movie, and it does set up the scene. What I like so much about Del Toro is whether it's this, whether it's even Pacific Rim, Pan's Labyrinth, Hellboy especially the second one, he brings you into a world. You're going into this different world, And even Kronos, it's not a futuristic world. It's not this fantasy world. But you feel in that it's dark, it's gritty, it's grimy. Even when stuff is going good, the colors used in it, it's very atmospheric. And that carries over the movies he produces, Orphanage, Mama. They're atmospheric. They take you into this world. And that's what I like so much about Del Toro. This isn't my favorite of his. But if I were to watch this in 1993, it's definitely going to make me say, I want to watch what this guy does next, because this guy's going to have an awesome career. And he has.
We say that it's not a horror movie, and it isn't. Del Toro is kind of known for being a horror director.
Which, when you look at his filmography, is that unfair?
Well, Mimic, it's definitely a horror movie.
Devil's Backbone.
Yeah, Devil's Backbone, sure. Pan's Labyrinth, okay.
I don't think so. That's a fantasy movie.
I can see it, though. Especially the guy that's, and Blade 2. From the guy that's done those, like, I can see where you would start to think that Pan's Labyrinth is. I mean, Hellboy to me is like a gothic action movie, but
and
maybe
see,
we're splitting
Blade
hairs.
Blade 2 is the same. Blade 2 is a superhero movie to me.
Yeah, that's...
Like, I guess, and I think I made this point before because it's jarring in my head now, like, I feel like Del Toro is this horror director that doesn't make horror movies. I think I've mentioned that before. I don't know in what, because everything he touches feels like a horror movie, even when it's not. And
it
so I think people think it's a horror movie, even when it's not.
Or a gothic tinge. And I think that when he's at his best is when he's not trying to make a horror movie, which makes me worried about Crimson Peak. Because of all of them, that one seems like, hey, this is a quote-unquote horror movie.
Mimic was a monster movie. That's
right.
That's a whole other thing, I think. It's a different genre almost than horror movies.
It's a subgenre.
Crimson Peak seems like a follow-up to Devil's Backbone.
Yeah.
I think Devil's Backbone is the most pure horror movie he's done. I think it's the only pure, straight horror movie that he's done. I like the idea of Crimson Peak. I like the idea of Mia Wasikowska.
I like the idea a lot.
Yeah, we'll see. The cast is fantastic. Hiddleston, Chastain, Mia Wasikowska,
that girl,
Jax Teller. I've liked so much of what he's done, though. Even the stuff that's just produced, Mama, The Orphanage, the Katie Holmes dark movie, they're good for what they are. So I don't know. I guess I got to give him the benefit of the doubt here.
I think when he's at his best, he's telling a story, which is what he was doing in Kronos. There was a story in Devil's Backbone, for sure. But when he's at his best, he's telling a story that just happens to usually have horror coloration. And I'm just worried that Crimson Peak, I don't know that the story is going to be quite in the forefront. Where, and again, maybe it's just the trailers.
See, I think it'll be character driven. I think
really
you
hope so.
He put together
he has
that
great
cast.
Characters.
And I think with that cast, it's going to be, and I hope it does well. Because in my little head, how my head works, the better this does, the closer we get to Pacific Rim 2.
I don't know about that.
So in my head, I want this to be a massive hit to pay for Pacific Rim 2.
I think they have canceled the apocalypse on Pacific Rim 2.
It's not canceled.
No,
it's
not
pushed
officially.
Back.
It's not dead, but they've definitely dropped a nuke in the rift on that one. Hellboy 3, still in the rumors.
Perlman doesn't even want to do it.
No, he's... what I do really enjoy about some directors, and Del Toro does it a lot, Spielberg's done it, Tarantino's done it, I like you using the same actors. I mean, you see Ron Perlman in this in 93, very early Ron Perlman, and then he's still using them in Pacific Rim and Hellboy. The girl that was the lead in The Orphanage, which wasn't a Del Toro movie, it was just a produced, that Baylen Rudea, he's used her in a couple movies too. Ooh. And
Jessica Chastain was the lead in Mama,
right?
Who's in this now.
I do like when a director can find someone that seems like Jessica Chastain feels like she could be and should be a Guillermo del Toro character. And Ron Perlman, even outside of the makeup, has the face that looks like he ought to be a del Toro character.
That's why Doug Jones was so good with him in Pan's Labyrinth. Mm-hmm. Like, they did awesome work together because that's what Doug Jones excels at.
Yeah, say what you want about whether or not you like his movies. I think stylistically, it's very hard to critique what he does, because I think even if you don't care for big robots fighting monsters, okay, fine. It's still cool to look at. there's still some really cool visuals in it.
Jaeger walking down the street dragging an aircraft carrier
or whatever. Yeah.
That's cool. I don't care. If you're a film snob, that is cool.
Right. And there's a lot of cool visuals in Pan's Labyrinth for sure.
Oh, man.
And if you are a film snob, I mean, watch Cronus and the Devil's Backbone.
And even Pan's Labyrinth.
Sure, yeah, okay.
See, I know you don't like Pan's Labyrinth.
I don't.
I think Pan's Labyrinth is a masterpiece. I think that's a beautiful movie, and I think it's a fantastic story. I think that might be my favorite, if you don't count Pacific Rim, that might be my favorite Del Toro movie, because I think Pan's Labyrinth is a gorgeous, beautiful, just piece of art that's amazing.
I think I'd love to watch it while I'm running the vacuum cleaner. That's fine. I guess my point is, like, if you are a film snob, the guy can make films. Cronos and Devil's Backbone, I think, are wonderfully made movies.
Blade 2. Look at Blade 2 compared to 1 and 3.
Yeah, it's the best of the three.
From a filmmaking standpoint, completely different level.
I think the guy is a very, very capable director. As much as I want to see Pacific Rim 2, and I do, I kind of relish the opportunity to see him do something different, because he does so many different things. Kind of going back to the Hellboy, well, all right, I'm going to get another Hellboy movie. And yeah, okay, they're fine. But I like when he goes off on a completely different path, makes a completely different kind of movie, because they're generally good, and then hop to a different genre.
Just, he's so into his art that he takes so long to make a movie. Crimson Peak seems to be in the works since 4 years
we started
now.
This podcast.
Yeah, the one he wants to do after Mouth of Madness or Mountains of Madness, he wants to do that next. That's been talked about for a decade now. So
Pinocchio announced that he's going to direct that. So, I mean, that'll probably come out in 2020. Cronos, 4 years later, was Mimic. 4 years later, Devil's Backbone. You follow that up with Blade 2, but there again, you know, that was kind of already sort of done for him. 2 years later, Hellboy. 2 years later, Pan's Labyrinth. 2 years later, Hellboy 2. And then,
yeah, he had a run there where,
yeah, then it was 5 years before we got to Pacific Rim. So guy can take his time, because
I'm a fan.
Yeah, I think we both are. And I'm sort of like, I think it's worth doing an orphanage episode. I sort of wish that we had done maybe Devil's Backbone instead, because that would have been a really good like follow-up. But I feel like it's pretty close to Cronos. I mean,
yeah, and that was my – I originally was going to suggest Devil's Backbone instead of Cronos, but you threw out Cronos and
– because I like it a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't think as many people have seen that.
And that's fine by me. Like, I thought I hadn't seen it, so I actually went to rewatch it for this episode. And then as I'm watching, it's like, oh, yeah, this happens next. So I have seen it at some point. I just didn't remember. But I don't think he's made a movie I don't like. I even liked Mimic. I saw Mimic in the theaters when it came out. I mean, I haven't watched it in forever. Oh, you know what? I'm thinking of The Relic. The Mimic and The Relic came out around the same time.
Yeah, they did.
That's the bug movie. Mimic's, but it's not bad. It's not bad.
Yeah,
movie.
Mimic is the bug movie.
Yeah, Relic's the museum.
Yes,
monster
the monster
movie.
Lives under the museum.
Both quality movies.
Yeah, absolutely. So good to kick off our quote-unquote Del Toro week with his feature debut with Cronos. As we mentioned, we'll follow it up with The Orphanage later on this week. We'd love you to follow this episode up with your fantasy film ball picks.
Deadline week.
Yes, deadline week. You guys are on the clock, so to speak. We've got a couple in already, so just make sure you send them to us by October the 16th is our deadline for that. You can send them emails, probably the easiest. moviesonup@gmail.com. Send us your five picks. If you're kind of confused as to what the rules are, the scoring is, go to moviesonup.com. We did a post back in September that has all the rules.
Breaks them out. They're very simple. It's very simple.
Yeah, you'll figure it out. I mean, goodness knows, if I can dream it up, you guys are smart enough to be able to figure out what we're going for here. So let us know what your picks are. It brings us a lot of joy to see what people are picking. And at least if you guys pick all five of my movies, it makes me feel really, really good.
They won't.
No, why would you? Send us your film ball picks. Hopefully you're digging what we've got coming up for you this October. Next week, I'm going to be flying the coop. My sister's getting married. So Mike Mann is going to slide into the other side of the desk from Mr. Dave Bacella. And they're going to do some found footage movies. For sure, Blair Witch. There may be a surprise in the second half of that week. If it's not a surprise, it's Bobcat's flick, Willow Creek. We'll see. TBD. But what is not TBD is I will be back for you the last week of October, where we'll do Monster Squad and a special Halloween episode. But until then,
keep it up.